Hey everybody, it's Camera Work Episode 6. This is John Ricard, portrait photographer based in New York City. I'm joined, as always, by Ray Tamara.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for listening. Ray Tamara, working photographer in New York City.
Right. We're also joined today by Pete Monsanto. Did I pronounce that correct?
You did.
Beautiful. Okay. So we're going to get to Pete in a second, and we're going to have him introduce himself and just explain who he is and what he does. And we have a bunch of things we want to talk to Pete about. But before we really even introduce you, let's just kind of run through the week, something we like to do when we start. So I'll start this time. The most interesting thing I shot this week was the promotion ceremony at Marcelo Garcia Jiu-Jitsu. And the reason that I'm bringing it up is because it refers to something we spoke about last week when we were saying that when you make this commitment to do something personal for yourself, in my case, to train in Jiu-Jitsu, sometimes it actually hurts you in your career, which is a weird thing because you're doing it to better yourself, and as you better yourself, you are bettering your career, but then you can also have it hurt your career in a little way. And for me, what happened was I got offered a paid job on the same night as the Marcelo promotion. So here I'm just shooting this thing as friends, you know, because I train at the place. Like, yeah, I'll come out, I'll shoot the promotion for you guys, it'll be a lot of fun. And then like 2 days before that, I get the call for the paid gig that night. And it was a new client, and I had to turn it down. And as bad as it is to turn down your regular clients, it's almost worse to turn down a new client because you don't know where that could go. They might have another gig next week, and next week, and the guy they hire, they may love him, or the girl they hire, they may love her, and then she becomes the person they keep calling. So it really hurt to lose the paid gig. But, you know, I honored the verbal commitment that I made to them that I'd come out and shoot this promotion. And I did it. And like I said, as much as I get from doing jiu-jitsu personally, okay, it hurt my career there a little bit. But overall, it makes me a better person. And it's definitely a worthwhile trade. And on a similar note, just a quick congratulations to Ray, who actually made it to Blue Belt. He got promoted to Blue Belt at that promotion that I'm talking
about. Congrats.
Thank you.
So how was your week, though, photographically?
I covered Letterman, and the big thing at Letterman this week was the Kate Upton and all the swimsuit models, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit models. Also, there was Fashion Week, but I didn't go there because I'm just in down mode. So I haven't been stressing myself working or overextending myself. I've just been working just the gig and kind of getting my mind right.
Right. Well, hopefully that involves some personal work because we're going to talk about that today. Hopefully that's in the mix because I don't know if it is. I haven't seen any that you've shown me, but we're going to talk about that in a second. What about you, Pete? Did you shoot anything interesting this week? Why don't you tell us? Let me back up first.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about what is it that you shoot normally.
Wow. I think the context of what I shoot normally is changing quite a bit. I wouldn't necessarily say my start, but my point of interest was so much the concert photography and focused on the hip hop culture. It's kind of changed a bit because I don't necessarily say it to my own horn to say I feel like I'm accomplished, but I feel like I've kind of gotten the body of work with the artists that I feel like inspire me and inspire a lot of the shots that I take and who I listen to. So I've kind of slowed down the concerts a bit, and I really want to start to work on my editorial presence and kind of take an art approach because I really like aesthetics and I read weird magazines and stuff like that.
Cool. Now, did you shoot anything this particular week?
I did. I took a quick snapshot of myself using this cool, it's a cardboard blockhead from the new craze in toys called Minecraft. So,
What is a cardboard blockhead? What does that mean?
It's almost like the foam finger that they have at like the sporting
events.
Okay,
right. Like it's a giant foam hand you put on your hand.
But it's a cardboard print of the actual Minecraft character. I'll have to show it to
you.
You could Google it and look it in on Amazon. Just put Steve or Creeper cardboard blockhead. It'll come up and it'll make you laugh a little bit. But I used one of those and took a snapshot with it because it's something that I'm going to want to work with moving forward, incorporating that with like fashion and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, okay. So tell us what brought you to photography originally?
Wow. Well, originally, it would be from my late teens. I picked up my first camera, and it was more of a hobbyist approach, or just an interest in taking pictures. professionally and working with my first SLR was really due to life circumstances. I was laid off from a job in 2009, and I didn't really have much of an activity, and I was in a bit of a funk like everyone else. I mean, it wasn't really a job for me. It was a career. And when you go through those kind of life changes, you get into a bit of a funk because you're wondering what you're going to do. So I ended up buying an SLR and a couple of Macs and a few lenses and just
started shooting. What led you to first start getting access? Because you started shooting concerts primarily.
Right.
So how did you start getting access into concerts? Because that's probably the one of, I think there's like three things everybody wants to shoot.
Right.
They want to shoot pretty girls, they want to shoot sports, and they want to shoot music artists.
Right.
And the question is always like, how do you get into that?
Right.
So in your case, because you did it, one of the reasons you're here is because, relatively speaking, you're new in the game.
I definitely am. Absolutely.
Okay, so it's like 3 or 4 years for you, whereas I've been full-time now, I think it's 13 years. Mm-hmm. So I thought the perspective there could be interesting. And Ray has been full-time at this how long?
Since 2001. So
About the same as me. So you're looking at about 12 years full-time. So I thought it'd be an interesting contrast to just see some of the differences and how it is when you came in versus when we came in the game. But how did you start getting the first access to artists? How did that work for you?
Okay, well, based from what you were saying about you and Ray, I definitely agree with, I took a pretty much unorthodox way of going about it and making a splash into it, because I think sometimes, I feel like I started backwards almost in a sense.
Right, well, what is it that you did?
My first concert, I was shooting for a promotion site, and I was working parties and events for them, and they would cover some of the after parties for the artists and stuff like that. And then one day they sent me to do, I think it was Governor's Island. Governor's Island for a Power 105 concert. And they sent me there, they had a pit pass, and I get into the pit and I start shooting and I felt comfortable. I'm a big fan of hip hop. A lot of lyricists really inspire me. So I think before that, I went to a show with Joe Budden and pulled out my camera, just took a few snapshots and said, you know, I like this. This is kind of fun. But my first real concert was probably Governor's Island.
How did you start building on that, though? So let's say you get this one promotion company, they're giving you access to Governor's Island. You kind of stumble your way into a Joe Budden show.
Right.
How does it start to build after that to where you're getting more regular access to concerts?
You got to start making the connections with the artists themselves, the managers, anyone from their team. Well,
what kind of approach were you making in order to get closer to the artists? What was a typical approach? What are you saying to the artist that is enabling you to get close to them and to get the access?
I just guerrilla style. A lot of times I'll be in the same area as they would be and say, hey, I have some cool snapshots here. I just want to show you. And they'll give me an opportunity to thumb through my camera and look at the pictures and go, oh, these are great. And I said, well, how can I get them to you? Oh, you can talk to this person. And they'll hand you their manager or someone directly close to them because they really want to see the images.
Right. Now, here's the first huge problem that I run into shooting music.
Yep.
And that's the idea that the artist expect to get the shots that you shoot of them. And this is a relatively new thing because if you think about it, in 2001, we were shooting slides. If you gave an artist a slide, they would have no idea what to do with this.
Right.
Nobody ever asked you. Like, it wasn't like you were going to shoot something in 2001, whoever might have been hot then, I don't know, Mace or whatever. And Mace wasn't going to come up to you and go, hey, could I get that picture in his little slow Mace voice? Because what would he do with a slide anyway?
Right.
Today, almost every time you photograph an artist, they go, let me see it. They look at the back of your camera and they go, yo, you got to get that to me. You know, what's your email?
That's you.
And it's it can be a very awkward situation.
Never let it be awkward. I try to keep the dialogue as funny as possible. I mean, whatever they're into, well, I talk about their sneakers or something just to relate to them and just say, hey, I'm a guy just like you and I enjoy what you do and the music you perform and this is why I'm here. And yes, I would like to get you these pictures. I could give you my email or you can give me yours.
Right. But how do you avoid the part where they're trying to get the shot for free? Because when they're coming to you saying, hey, I got to get that shot, they're not talking about what's your rate. They're just like, I want the shot, send it to me. Because the implication today is as if I take your photo, I owe you a copy of the photo, as if that's the agreement. Whereas in my mind, the only agreement is like, if you let me take your photo, I represent you in a good light. That's, in my mind, what the agreement has always been. That's why you stood in front of my camera, because you could have taken your own picture, but it would have been horrible. The mm-hmm. reason you came to me as a professional was I'm going to represent you in a beautiful light.
Right.
So that's my part of the bargain. My part of the bargain is not that you now have this photo that you can do whatever you want to do with. And
right.
as you start to use it, it kills my ability to sell the photo. And
right.
what's the point of this whole thing?
Right.
But how do you avoid that? Or how did you avoid it in the past? Or how do you avoid it now?
I show them the ones that I'm definitely not going to care about. So, in a sense, if they take the photo and they distribute it, it's obviously going to kill the ability to sell it. I wouldn't try to avoid it, but ones that I know are special to me that I'm only going to keep for my archive or try to move the content, I'll thumb past it pretty
right.
quickly so
okay.
they can't see it.
I know what I did. I came from a similar background. I was doing a lot of hip-hop stuff, and I cut my teeth at hip-hop, but I was asked to cover a concert at the Hammerstein Ballroom by a big radio station, and I said, okay, sure. And when I was backstage, one of the personnel from that big radio station said, oh, can you send those pictures to me?
I think I was with you.
You send those pictures to me tomorrow? And I said,
right.
well, you know what? You have to contact. I tried to thumb it off to my agency. And then they said, well, you have to leave. And I said,
right.
okay.
Let me stop you one quick second. Now, one of the defenses that we use for this is because a lot of times the promoters and things, they don't really understand the agency. So if you're shooting for like a Wire Image or a
right.
Getty, and this becomes a fantastic defense, you go, I'm not allowed. You got to call Wire Image and they deal with all my distribution. I'm not allowed to send you something. So that was your first defense was like, hey, go to Getty. You're probably shooting for Getty at that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your first defense is like, well, go to Getty. And if they're going to give it to you, they'll give it to you, whatever, but I'm not allowed to. That didn't work. And then what happened?
And then she asked me to leave and I said, okay.
Yeah, I remember that. That was
because I wasn't invested in it, and
right.
I certainly don't want a company that's markedly richer and has more resources than me exploiting my pictures. So I didn't get to shoot the headliner, but I was okay with that. And
right.
at the end of the day, I don't go cover those events by that radio station because I value my images. Maybe I don't get access to those artists,
right.
but I'm fine with that.
Right. And then, see, here's the problem, because the problem with what you're saying, Pete, to
right.
me is that the issue is not whether or not the image is good or not.
Right.
First of all, they should pay
is
for
it?
Any image, period.
Right.
Doesn't
it
matter
should. It
what
should.
It is. They should pay for any image.
Absolutely.
And the point, the hard part is that what we have to do all the time is educate the client. So
mm-hmm.
we need to be trying to explain to these artists, like, look, you need to pay for the picture the same way you charge for your verses. We charge for our photographs, and this is valuable, and you need to pay for it. And it's a difficult thing to do. It really is. And for me personally, if I'm dealing with the manager, I don't find it that difficult. First of all, back up a second. If I'm dealing with the record company, it's super easy.
Right.
Record company doesn't really come at you for free pictures, especially as you get with the higher level people.
Right.
The lower level people there might say, hey, we need that picture to send out. I just got
right.
a request today. And then you have to educate them. But by the time you're dealing with like a senior publicity person, they're not coming to you for free pictures. They understand that they're supposed to pay for this, and they're working with a budget. If you're dealing with the manager, you can say to the manager also, like, look, I need to get paid for this. We need some money for this picture. The problem for me is when you're dealing with the artist directly.
Right.
That's where, for me, it becomes super awkward.
It's
if I have
foggy.
A,
yep.
Yeah, if I have a relationship with that artist, just like it'd be hard to say to my mother, like, hey, I'm going to charge you for this photo.
Right.
For me personally, and it shouldn't be, but for me personally, I find it awkward to say to the artist directly, hey, well, I have to charge you for that.
Right.
Because you feel it sort of damages that relationship. And those photographers who have a really good relationship with the people they shoot, a guy like a Matthew Jordan Smith, where he shoots Angela Bassett, you know, like all the time, and he shot Tyra Banks, I admire their ability. And I've even asked him personally, like, man, how do you do it? And he's just like, I just do it, or I have my manager do it, my business manager do it. And I think that helps because that becomes this buffer between
yeah.
you and the artist, where you're just like, if your people call my people, and we don't have to have that conversation. But that is really super awkward. But I would advise as much as I can, the less we give them free stuff, because it really should not be a trade, and that's
yeah.
what it's becoming. And
it is.
It's one of the most difficult things about being a music photographer today. It's a constant request for free pictures from the manager
yep.
and the artist.
No, I think that's commonplace now. in order to have access to those celebrities, I know that the biggest photographers, they are expected to either hold shots or give shots in exchange for that proximity. I mean, and that's the way it is.
And another thing that changed with the artist is a couple things that changed. One is years ago, the artist didn't have a lot of places to go to be photographed properly.
Right.
So what you had was very valuable. Today, I look at it like, well, if they don't shoot with you, they'll shoot with him, her.
And I'm going to talk about that.
Right. So then they can get those shots from those other people. So that hurts us. And the other thing that hurt, I think, is that the celebrities realized how much money they can make on themselves. So now, like, again, I don't think 10 years ago, like, Mace was paid to go to a party. You know, whereas the equivalent.
No, not now. They
right.
$5,000 just to walk in and right. have a bottle of free champagne.
Right. So the equivalent artist, like a Meek Mill of today or an Ace Hood,
yeah.
like he's accustomed to, like, if he does something, he gets paid for it. So then he's looking at it like, well, why am I shooting for you for free? Like, why would I come to your studio and stand here for 2 hours and let you photograph me and let you make money on it? And then I go home and I'm not making any money off of it. This doesn't make sense to me. So they monetize everything now. They
everything.
Do a perfume line, a clothing line.
Absolutely.
You know, they're charging for their verses. They're not doing right. records because you're my boy. They're, you know, they're jumping on your record because they're going to get a fee from you. So they're just expected to get something for everything they do now. And that does make it difficult as a music photographer. And it's not a problem that I've solved completely. It really
right.
isn't. And, you know, each time you deal with it differently. But I do think the more we can educate the client is crucial. That's our job, to try to educate the client.
But also educating the client, but educating yourself, because these companies expect you to give your photos for free, and that's their policy.
Right.
So, I mean,
yeah, and then sometimes you just, you know, you say, I'm not going to play that game, and like you said, I'm just going to walk away and not do it.
Right.
Sometimes on an individual basis, you might play that game and do it. It's just each one is an individual thing, but I think the better you understand the issues involved with it, the better you can educate them. And I've had times where, like, people act like, well, because I shot it quick, it's not valuable. Like that idea, like,
no.
you did like a quick grip and grin shot, and they think it's not valuable. And I'll try to go, look, if Jay-Z did a verse on your record and it took him 3 minutes to record it,
right.
does that mean it's only worth $12?
Well, he's still going to charge $150,000.
Right. Because
minimum.
It doesn't, you're going to penalize
right.
Jay-Z because he can nail it in one take.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how long it took me to take the shot.
Right.
The issue is, what is this photograph valued at? What's the worth of the photograph?
Right.
Not how much work did I do to create it. That's
okay.
irrelevant. You know.
Well,
but you were going to say something about the
yeah.
artists being having all these choices and photographers or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, here's the thing. I jotted that down. When you go into these concert situations, and I'm just going to name drop one artist just because he's relatively new, and this was a perfect situation. So you got the guy Trinidad James, right? And he does a show at Santos. So where Ray was talking about, they're almost expecting you to give your photos for free, because if you don't give it for free, there was maybe 25 to 30 people either in front of the stage or even on the stage that will give it for free.
Right.
So
and
you're
the
almost
expectation,
expected to give something, just like
where
the
is this coming from, though? Is it coming from Santos House, you're saying, or from, like, management?
Or you're coming
something?
From management or whoever you're going to approach.
Okay.
Because they don't only make contact with one person. You know, just as I may be aggressive and I'll say, hey, you know what, I'm looking to make this connection with this artist and with this management, with this team.
Right.
So I'm going to go to them and inform them, hey, I've got these images. How can I? So you shuffle the barter a little bit. Just like he said, to get that proximity, I'm prepared to say, okay, I'm going to give 5 shots.
Right.
And I'm going to email a 72 DPI. He's
right.
really not going to be able to do too much with, but I know I'm going to take a hit somewhere. But it's going to allow me to get access to other exclusive areas where I may get invited to a video set where there's nobody else.
Right.
Now you could spin that off into something else. But if you don't give something, they're going to go somewhere else. The unsigned rapper has to do, I don't know how many freestyles and mixtapes that feature artists like Meek Mill who would get paid
right.
that they're going to give away
right.
because they need to get the audience. And the people are
right.
not even going to care if they're not going to give something away. So
right.
this is always going to be a game of give and take.
Right. Except, and was there something more you want to say on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Keep
and
going.
When you look at, like, the outlets, for example, you know, you guys have been in the game for quite some time, so Ray's been blessed to, you know, shoot with Getty. Even if you go the PR route and say, okay, I'm going to go to the person's PR and then see if I can get a placement somewhere, they're going to ask for free right off top, immediately. And
right.
a lot of times they won't even invite you because you're not a Getty or you're not a Wire, because I don't want to badmouth them, but they're lazy. They don't want to do a press release. If someone from Getty comes in and they shoot spec, they're automatically going to go up online.
Right.
The artist is going to get their exposure. So why do I need you at that point? So it's
right.
Like you're going to give me these pictures for free, or I'm going to take the Getty ones, and my artist is going to have more exposure.
Right,
anyway.
And then you get this issue, too, that if you're shooting like a Trinidad James and
right.
you've got the shots, there is no there's no money source to give them to anyway. Because
right.
something like a Vibe or a Double XL that would feature Trinidad James, they're
right.
not running a live shot from Santos' house.
Nope.
And the blogs that might run it, they're not paying at all. None of the blogs are paying. So
here's a spin to that. Here's a spin to that. I've found, and I hate to give this secret away, but you know what? We're all in the same community. When you look at, I'll give you one of the more popular outlets, we'll say Global Grind,
right?
For example. All of these outlets and these blogs, they all have Getty and Wire subscriptions to download pictures. Now, for them, the cost of a picture to get one image would be a set fee of maybe, you know, if they're going to run it on the blog in, you know, a higher resolution and then keep it in the archive, they're paying maybe $150 to $200 for an image. So you find that, you know, we don't have much of a budget. We don't want to really spend that kind of money on those photos. You can almost approach them and say, hey, I can service you 10 or 15 images that really are like your bottom 10% that you know you're not going to use. It's your throwaways. But to everyone else, hey, these are great. We can put a gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And set a price for that batch of images and say, you could buy these outright. They'll be royalty free, and you don't have to worry about being sued by Getty for having it on the website for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And you can play like the game of leverage and really squeeze some money out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you make the connection with the artist, you could say, hey, I got your pictures. They're going to run a segment on you for on this website because you got that connection. So now they're saying, oh, thanks. We needed that publicity. We didn't have a contact over there. And they say, well, I got you that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you foster the relationship where they're going to start inviting you out to things like that. You really have to put the spin on it and know how you're going to leverage yourself.
Right. I think that's an example of trying to carve your own path.
Absolutely.
Which is crucial because there's no one solution that works for everyone. It's
yep.
a matter of figuring out what thing can you figure out that is going to work.
Yep.
But, you know, the crazy part, though, is that the free stuff that we do really should be on the lower level, though. And this is the thing that bothers me. And again, we
mm-hmm.
all deal with this. Sometimes we do have to deal with a bigger level artist and we're doing something for free.
Right, right.
But in reality, the free stuff should come from just our personal work, not the work that we're trying to do professionally. Because
yeah.
by the time we're ready to stand in front of Trinidad James and take that photo, whether it's at a concert or whatever, we really should be in the paid part at that part. And the
yeah.
stuff that we're doing for free is we were just calling up some dude. Then we go, man, this cool. This guy's got a good look. Or this girl has a good look. I want to shoot her and add her to my book.
Right.
That's the work that should be free.
Yep.
But by the time we're doing something in a situation where everybody's making money, the club's making money, the artist is making
right.
money, the radio station's making money,
right.
and then we're the one piece of that puzzle not making money,
right.
that's really bad.
There's too many of us, John. There's just simply too many. And,
right.
and this is not because I was one of those young, fresh-faced kids. You've seen me on the BET set.
Right.
And, you know, everyone's buying cameras. You know, and they go and they rent a lens for, you know, I don't know, $25. And
right.
they come in and they manage to wiggle some room or maybe try to push past Ray and get
right.
a couple of shots in.
Right.
You don't know what they're going to do with them.
Right.
So you really have to kind of position yourself to, like I said, carve yourself and make it, take an extra step to say, hey, I can do this, this, and this.
Right.
You
and
have
I,
to do it.
Right.
And
there's
no outlets a lot of times.
Yeah, especially with the lower level stuff in particular. It's,
right.
it's hard, you know. But let's talk about personal work for a second.
Sure.
Okay. So how much – what is your definition of personal work and how much personal work do you shoot? Stuff that's not assigned, not commissioned, that you don't expect to sell.
I try to shoot any idea that I would say – I'm really so connected to the music, so it's a 50-50. You know, I'll find somebody that I really, like you said, has a good look and say, I want to add them to my book, or I really think you'd be great to photograph. And it's a 50-50 split. I mean, even going to the shows, I enjoy hip-hop so much that I know I'm going to attend anyway. So if I know I'm going to go, then I'm almost doing myself a disservice to say, you know, it would have really been great if I had my camera. I've gone to shows, And the concert was so good, and I ended up getting a good spot and finding out that I know someone there that gave me a backstage pass, and I'm like, man, I didn't have my camera. Now, if I had my camera, this would have really been great. Mm-hmm. So I'm almost connected. I'm connected to the music, and I shoot it on a personal level as well as on a professional level. And if I get some good shots, I say, you know what? I was going to go to this show anyway. I bought tickets to support the artist, and these pictures are great. I'm going to try to make that connection. So that fine line between the business and the personal is something that I often cross.
Right. Now, I'm not going to let that stand as personal work. I'm not going to let that pass for personal work.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a different definition of personal work.
Sure.
Personal work would be work that you are independently producing, mm-hmm. shooting on your own, mm-hmm. that represents where you want to go photographically. And I think it's a crucial area. It is the single most important thing that we as photographers should do. Mm-hmm. And last week, I spent a total of 30 minutes on it, which is nothing. I didn't do it last week. I didn't do any at all. The week before that, I probably spent an hour on it.
Right.
And it's the single most important thing that I could be doing right now.
Right.
And Ray, how much time did you spend on personal work in the last week?
You know what? Personal work, I have trouble with personal work because I have a block with personal work, because anything that I'm not making money at with my camera,
you gotta love Ray.
Then I don't want to do it. And it's a block that I've been wrestling with, because I can see something, but I won't take it because I can't make money at it. And then I'll just go, and then I just focus in on celebs head to toe, take the shoe, take the headshot. And that
right.
limits.
Let me back up a second, because again, I want to be clear with this. See, Ray, in my mind, Ray is like a beast photographically, because listen to what he just said there. What Ray will do is, so if we're at that, whatever, Rihanna press conference.
Right.
Ray is, he's really focused. Ray, because I've stood next to Ray a million times shooting, and I'm kind of having fun. It's like an experience for me, because I don't do a ton of events. So I have a lot of fun, the few ones that I do. But Ray, he's super focused, and Ray's thinking I got to get the full length. I got to get the three quarter. I got to get the tight headshot. I got to get the smile. I got to get the no smile.
Right.
Got to get the jewelry detail. And in that little 90 second burst, he has created 7 or 8 marketable shots.
Right.
And I'll give you one other example with Ray. You'll have a music convention. I think these things like Jack the Rapper or whatever. Give me an example of one of them.
This
is something he used to shoot 10 years ago.
How can I be down when you would go to Miami?
Correct. These types. So Ray would shoot hip hop 10 years ago, this kind of thing. Now, everybody does the same thing. You're looking for the artists. You shoot the artist, and what most photographers do is they pair artists, which is so silly because those shots never sell. But these photographers are just obsessed with it's, Ace Hood and Meek Mill. Let's put them together and, let me get you with Ace Hood. It's the shot never sells, but that's what everybody's running around shooting.
Right.
Solos of artists and pairings of artists.
Right.
Ray would be the only guy that shoots the record label people. He's the only guy grabbing headshots. He finds a clean wall. And if he sees the Atlantic Records publicity, senior head of publicity, assistant head of publicity, record label president, he's nailing headshots.
Do the same thing.
And he makes money on the stuff. Because when those guys get promotion, when they get arrested, when they change companies, those shots run. And then and 10 years ago.
I did the same thing for an exec very recently. And, she would thank me. And she's a friend of mine. And I said, you know what? Why don't you let me shoot you? I really like her features anyway.
Right.
And I said, I'd love to do a portrait shot of you. So I went into her office just to talk to her about something completely arbitrary.
Right.
And then I said, you look great today. I have my camera. Why don't you let me take a couple of pictures of you? So I just took it just to snap it. And her being my friend, I posted it up and I said, this is one of the hardest working women in the business.
Right.
And I said, here, just go ahead and take it. She thanked me maybe 5 weeks later and said, I got a promotion. Was in Rolling Stone. I needed to send a headshot, and I said, it's fine. I'm not really making a qualm about it. It was this big in the magazine. But just to give her that, and then she said, this is so great.
Right.
I said,
hopefully that pays off. Hopefully that pays off as she gets that promotion, pulls her for the next job.
Right.
But the funny thing, so what Ray is saying here is what happens is, though, so since he's in what I call that beast mode, where everybody else is just at the convention looking for artists, and Ray's nailing different types of shots, he's constantly in that, how can I monetize this? How can I monetize this? Now, when it comes time to do personal work where he's not going to make any money, boom, you hit this creative
block. Now, does that take away from the love?
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I was telling you before. I said I have to wrestle with it because now on the weekends when I don't work and I have a camera, I don't want to press the shutter. And even if I see something beautiful, it's just there's a block that says I'm not making money, so I can't press the shutter. I can't even see it.
Right.
And that's the thing is that because I saw photography as commerce for me, but now I'm trying to explore photography as art, my communication, my expression.
Right. Now, I'm going to explain something about personal work that I think can maybe help put it in a way that people can understand. Okay.
Right.
So let's understand what happens when you do personal work. So, Pete, I saw you shot something. It was like a commercial campaign for something called Neff. So what is Neff? That's a clothing company?
Neff is a clothing company. They started out doing hats. It's like Neff headwear. So it was really more or less snowboard was their target market.
Right.
And then they started making T-shirts and jackets, and they're doing a whole branding thing where they're expanding. I got paid for that.
Right. Now, what did you shoot? Explain what was the content of the shots that you shot.
The content, really, it was more about the clothing and who I was photographing.
Right. So who was in the pictures?
They were very popular radio hosts from New York City.
It's the Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, yep. Angela Yee, Charlamagne, and DJ Envy.
Okay. And then where was this shot? Was it studio location?
It was studio. It was done at the, I think it was the Carmeloop office in Midtown.
Oh, okay. And you used like artificial lighting, I guess.
Yep. They were ring lights, your favorite.
Right. Ah, there you go. So now let's look at this a second. Let's really break this down and understand what's happening.
Yep.
When you take that photo, you add it to your book.
Yep.
Okay. So in the photo, we had some people and the people were wearing clothes, correct?
Correct.
So did you decide what clothes they were wearing, or were the clothes they were wearing basically dictated by the confines of the job? Could you have said...
Did I add a personal touch to it?
No, that's not what I'm asking. The question is, could you have said on that particular shoot, we're going to put them in Kenneth Cole?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Right.
So the clothing they were wearing was not really under your control.
No.
Now, you may have had a little bit of insight and said, right, let's put the red with the blue, whatever, but for the most part, the clothing was not under your control.
No.
So if I had shot that job, let's say they called me, would they have essentially been wearing the same clothing in the photo?
If you had done the same...
If Neff had called me instead of calling?
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure.
All right, what about the people? How did the people get chosen for the shoot? How did the Breakfast Club get chosen for Neff? Neff had a relationship with the Breakfast Club. What was the...
They went with the approach on what would work for them. I believe that they're trying to almost get into the urban hip-hop market.
Right.
And the Breakfast Club, as big as they are still very early in their careers.
Right.
And they took a shot at, I guess, contacting their management and whoever they needed to get in touch with to say, hey, we'd love to do a campaign with you guys.
So Neff essentially picked the talent.
Yes.
Okay. So again... Had I shot the job, would the same people have been in the photograph?
Yeah.
They would have been.
Absolutely.
Right? Because
you had no control over
who. You didn't.
I'd have control of the people there.
Or the clothes.
Okay. Or the clothing.
So you want to talk about things that I'm taking creative control and who I'm selecting?
No, not at all. No. I'm going to get to the point, but that's not the point. Location. Okay. Let me speed it up a little. So let's take the location.
Okay.
Again. Did Neff have this sort of concept in mind that it's going to be done studio and that we're going to be at the Carmeloop offices?
Well, they picked they're based out of California, so they picked a location. I brought to the table, we should probably do some street photography as well.
Right, because the ones I saw were actually on location.
Yep.
But the point of the matter is that Neff also had a hand in where this was shot.
Sure.
So when you start now I'm assuming
the
that...
Pain.
Right, there you go. So they're going to call the shots.
Right.
So, but look at what's happening now. Now, I'm assuming something from this is going to make your book, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we already discussed the terms.
So, boom, this is in your book.
Mm-hmm.
But look at this now. Really, really think about this. How much of that shoot is really reflective of you? Because had I shot that shoot, it would have been different because you and I are different people.
Right.
But it would have been the same clothing
in
the same location with the same people.
I think I get what you're saying, but for when I asked them, how did you select me? You got a plethora of photographers that you could have. One, we got a referral and we checked you out. We looked into you for about a week and we like what you represent. You reflect everything.
Okay, but the bottom line is, you agree with the that's a broad statement.
Yep.
Had I shot that project or had Ray shot it, in many ways, it would have been a very similar end result.
I agree.
So
I agree.
If that's the case.
But they would market, they would say, you know, we picked you because you do this.
We don't care about them because we're only talking about the photographers and the personal work right now.
Right.
And now let's get to personal work.
Okay.
Because forget Neff right now. We're talking about personal work and the value of it. So here's the point that I'm trying to make, though.
Right.
So if you shoot that job and you put that in your book,
mm-hmm.
there's a certain percentage of Pete in that photo.
Yes.
And there's a big part that is not reflective of Pete.
Right.
I'm not learning about Pete. I'm learning about Neff from
you've
that picture.
About what
and
I've done.
Believe me, this is for all of us. For 99% of the photographers, their entire book has been created through assignment photography.
Yeah.
And the problem with the assignment photography is there are many elements that are not in your control.
Okay.
Because when the artist comes in, they bring their stylist and they dictate the location based on their schedule and what window they have, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take personal work. Now, had you taken that day instead and said, okay, I'm going to shoot something that's in my personal life.
Right.
I'm going to go shoot my girlfriend. Or I'm going to go take pictures at my job. Or I'm going to go shoot my best friend or something that I'm into. I'm into science fiction. I'm not sure what your personal things you're into. Imagine a photo you would have created. And then imagine if I said on that same day, I'm going to go shoot something in my life. I'm going to go shoot my daughter. I'm going to go shoot my jiu-jitsu training.
Right.
I'm going to go to California to where I love this other jiu-jitsu school, 10th Planet. I'm going to go shoot some pictures there.
Right.
How similar would those pictures be?
Aesthetically, they wouldn't be. And I do have a section
not
on my website that says downtime so people can see stuff that I just...
That you're doing.
That
right.
I shoot because I just feel like it.
Right.
You know
that's, that reflects you.
A
but
lot
the,
of it
but
is
the point
kids
is,
and,
if you go do personal work tomorrow and I do personal work tomorrow, it will not look the same at all.
No, it doesn't.
There will be no...
It doesn't. But you want to create the balance between the monetary part, too. So we're putting the things in our book to say, okay, I can bring some money
in. Yeah, but we'll just get back to that in a second.
Okay.
You're correct about that. But just hanging on to personal work for one more second.
Mm-hmm.
The point, though, is that as you shoot the personal work, it's going to be so different than anything anybody else could create.
That's correct.
Because, again, like Ray hikes. So maybe Ray is going to shoot hiking for his personal work.
Right.
And maybe I'm going to shoot my daughter. And I don't know, what might you shoot or what do you shoot when you're doing something
kids,
personal?
Girls, a lot of structures.
Okay.
And
Let's stay with either structures, which is something I never shoot. I don't shoot anything that doesn't have people in it. So I don't shoot structures. And then girls I can't shoot because I'm married. So I don't shoot them either.
Okay.
So here you go. You might shoot a girl. I might shoot my daughter. Ray might shoot something in the hiking world.
Mm-hmm.
Those have no overlap at all. And this is why the personal work is so valuable. And none of us
I
do
agree.
It. I spent half an hour on it last week and an hour on the week before. Ray, you said you spent no time last week.
But it doesn't sell. That's why we don't spend
much time
on it.
But
I wanted to add that there's a story that there was a really successful skateboard photographer. He used to do big budget skateboard shoots.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of got tired of that, and he got into Harleys. And what he did was he bought Harleys. He loved Harleys, and he rode Harleys. And as an extension of that, because he was a photographer, he started photographing Harleys.
Right.
And that was his personal project.
Right.
But Dickies saw the pictures of the Harleys, and they said, we want that aesthetic for this campaign.
Right.
And that's where the transition is.
Right.
When
it,
you're passionate
so
about a personal project and they see that vision, the client sees that vision, they want that vision for their product.
Right. Now, this is huge because this is, again, let me explain.
Exactly.
This is how the personal work turns into money because you're going, well, I'm not going to make any money. Both of you are saying it. And I say the same thing because I don't do it either. But this is how it happens. It's just what you're saying. If I'm the Neff Clothing Company, by the time I pick the clothing, the location, and the people in the photos, really, in a lot of ways, it doesn't matter who I hire. It just doesn't because so much of it is figured out already.
Right.
But when you've got this great body of personal work and you're really making a statement, when you're doing something, you look at what Glenn E. Friedman did in like 1975. He's shooting skateboarders. These kids are like inventing a whole new way to skate. And this guy's just shooting it. And you've got that kind of vision. Then what can happen is a completely different company. Like you're saying, Gap will go, we don't want pictures of skateboarders, but we want that vision, that world that he's
lifestyle.
Got. We want that lifestyle.
Right.
We need that guy to do it. So it absolutely can pay off in the long run. It doesn't pay off in a short run. And all of us, we're all trying to make a living at this. So
here's a good example for that.
You
look at the Volkswagen campaigns. If you ever notice, all of their car commercials are centered around families. There's usually two kids in the ad, But then when you look at the stills on their website, they use a specific photographer. I forget his name, but I've been to the website. It's all stuff that he normally shoots. When you go to his website, you'll see the Volkswagen ad and the stuff that he shoots. Kids blowing bubbles.
And he's not a car photographer, right?
He's really not.
Right, and then the mistake we make is if we're trying to become car photographers is we run around trying to shoot cars and these dumb events, and we're running around and we're giving away free pictures, and we're trying to make $200 shooting a low-level car designer.
That's right.
And it's completely off base. You'd be better off doing the personal work, developing this world that you're photographing.
Right. That someone Volkswagen, comes into it.
Right, and someone can go, we like that, because believe it or not, sometimes Volkswagen doesn't care if you know how to shoot a car. They want to know if you can create a certain mood, a certain feeling that reflects Volkswagen. So if your photography is fun and a Volkswagen is fun, you might get hired to shoot a Volkswagen ad, despite the fact you can't shoot a car.
Right. You're not really like what you capture kids very well or whatever they're trying to pass on as their message.
Correct.
Market-wise. Absolutely. Right. I agree.
And that's for all of us. And really, the key to all of that is the personal work. And I'm giving you one more example of how I look at what the personal work is and the value of it.
Okay.
It's as if you're in a band. And when you're being assigned work, it's almost like you're doing a cover song.
Right.
You're putting your stamp on it. Like if I give, you know, if you take Could You Be Loved for Bob Marley and I give it to Rihanna and then I give it to 2 Chainz, it is going to be 2 different songs.
Completely.
But in some ways, it's very similar because it's still Could You Be Loved.
It's still Could You Be Loved, yep.
And you're doing a cover because someone has set these parameters. You have to use these lyrics and do this song. But if you go and write your own song, if 2 Chainz does an original song, and if Rihanna does her own original song, those songs are different. And as photographers, that's what we need to do. Because like I say, the real bottom line is, if you shoot an F campaign and Ray shoots it and I shoot it, yeah, it's going to be different. But to a large degree, it's going to be the same.
Yeah, because it's scripted.
Because it's scripted. It's just parameters. But if I do my personal work and you do yours and Ray does his, it's going to be totally different. And that's the value as a photographer. And again, and this is the part that drives me crazy because like I shoot at BET and I take great photographs. Like every single week of my life, I create great photographs.
Right.
And I create stuff that's never been shot on that set.
Right.
My backstage stuff is fantastic. I do great work. But I'm dependent on BET to provide what I'm shooting. And if you think about what I'm saying, so when I take good pictures at BET, what is the message? I can pretend the message is John Ricard is a great photographer, but that's really not what I'm communicating.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm communicating is if you go and create a television program and you go hire 2 gorgeous hosts to host it,
mm-hmm.
and you build a big TV studio and you invite the number one artist on the planet to come there, I can take a good photograph. Like, well, thank you. That's good. Wow. Like, you know, so it's like you're going up to a client. Imagine saying that to a client. You want to see how good my photography is? Okay, you go get Rihanna, and you go dress her really good, and you go get me a great studio, and I'm going to show you a good picture of her. It's like, you sound insane. What you need to be showing people is that you are a great photographer by yourself, without anybody. Like, a writer who's a great writer, he doesn't sit around and go, okay, go stage a revolution in Cuba, and then I'll write about it and show you how great of a writer I am. No, he sits in his little cave of a room, and he creates an amazing piece of writing. And that's what we admire. Not somebody who can just document something that's happening. Because, again, to some degree, anybody can write the story of that. It's what can you do on your own? That's the crucial part. And as much as I understand it, like I'm telling you, and I'm going to say it again, I spent 30 minutes last week. I timed it because I was doing street photography. That's part of my personal work, is to go out there and shoot the street. And I came up with this kind of novel way to do it, which I showed it to Ray. We're going to talk about that on a different podcast. And I spent exactly 30 minutes doing it last week. That was it. And I know it's a mistake to spend such a little bit of time on something so important. But the personal work is crucial, more important than just trying to make money on these shoots that we do. And I urge anybody listening to get out there and do the personal work, because that's really the only thing that matters.
That's the reason why you started.
But at the expense of the making rent.
Yeah, you should.
You can.
I know.
But you can.
I don't do it. I know.
There's a way to balance that. We're going to get into that at some point. I don't ever want to be, and I love you to death, Ray, but it's almost like you've, in a sense, the reasons behind it is really all money driven. And I wouldn't say that that may be why you've kind of like been in like a little bit of a funk, but you haven't really carved out anything for yourself, mm-hmm. other than, you know, you got to do the rent thing and all that. And I was there.
Yeah.
I was there a couple of months ago,
right.
where it's like, you know, I don't really have the time to go up to Connecticut and shoot my mom. And, you know, everyone, my mother right. really hates being in front of right. the camera. So I try to go up. She lives in New Haven, Connecticut, and say, Mom, you know, I want to take pictures. You know, no, I don't want to take photos. But if I don't create that time to do it, you know, it's your mom.
Right.
And
right.
in the back of my mind, I kept saying, oh, you know, I can't really make the time because I really got to work. I got to keep hustling.
Right.
And without the personal work, I felt like I was disconnected.
Right. right. It feels like it's the least important thing, but yeah. it's not. Right. Now, talk to us in terms of income, right? So you work outside of photography as well.
I do work outside of photography. I recently just got a position I'm a public figure. They tell you to look it up online anyway, but I work in New York City for the Transit Authority. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I decided I needed to do because not so much as photography wasn't paying, it's I'm not with an agency. So I'll get chosen to shoot something and I'll make a gob of money. But when is the next $3,000 or $4,000 gonna come?
Right.
You know, so you're in a position where you're gonna stretch it or you're gonna go out, you're gonna do that and then say, I'm gonna shoot some nightlife stuff. I'm gonna make a partnership with, promoter and I could make $200 a night doing this and this.
Right.
But you're not getting any sleep. You're kind of killing yourself and then your lifestyle changes.
Right.
So, with me getting a job, I really wanted to be able to dictate what I feel like shooting. So now I've, in a sense, gotten the love back. In addition to that, if there's any photographer that told you that our art life gives you a pension, a 401k, and medical benefits, they lied.
Yeah, it doesn't automatically, does it? But I think
there's ways, but it right. just right off top if you're
right, yeah, it's not there. If you're not business smart, if you're not business right. savvy about it. Right. And you know, it's funny because Zach Arias, who he puts some really good content online. Mm-hmm. He's one of you guys. He does a blog. He finished it already, but he did a blog called Ask Me Anything About Photography.
Right.
And I think he answered it might have been 1,000 questions total in the course of like a year. Right. And I read a lot of it and I thought like 85-90% of it was just right on point.
Yeah.
So seldom I disagreed with him. He was right on point. And he did a webinar recently that said, like, the topic was, if I was starting photography today, what would I do?
Right.
And the thing he said, the very first thing he would do is get an accountant. And I think it plays into what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Because the accountant is going to say, well, you know, you're making X amount of profit, but you don't have a 401k. You don't have a retirement plan. You don't have a savings account. You need to get it. So, yeah, I think that is crucial. And it's another area that a lot of us don't, you know, we don't pay attention
we
to.
Don't.
Right.
We
don't. But Ray was telling me last week something about this topic.
I wanted to talk about that, and that's freelance insurance, but I also wanted to add on top of what Pete was saying is that when I first started my career, photography was making me zero money, and I would call it my maybe money.
Right.
And then I was a street vendor. I was selling anything and everything on the street. I learned how to sell on 34th Street. So I was selling sex position pamphlets for a dollar in Times Square. And that was my for sure money. And it became my mortgage money. And then eventually, as my photography career grew and I was getting more pay clients, then the photography became the mortgage money.
Right.
And then I had to just step away from the street vending because that was just not smart to do anymore. So photography, if you nurture it, it can
right.
be a primary source of income. And
right.
when it is, then you have to be smart about it. And I would basically look at those shows like Susie Orman and I'm like Kramer. I would say, how can I be wealthy? How can
right.
I be comfortable like the rappers that I shoot?
Right.
And
we didn't even mention that, but that's one of the most offensive things, right? Is here's some guy
right.
with a chain that costs like $50,000 asking you for a free photo. You're like,
oh my gosh,
you know, come on, man.
Tell me about
you know,
it.
You're right. Watching these guys smoke more weed. Like the amount of money they spend on weed in a day
right.
is what you would have charged for the photo. Like you're
right.
like,
right.
dude, you could just lay off weed for like a day and right. you could pay my fee for this photo.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's particularly offensive. But
and then and by with that type of frame in mind, because I want to be comfortable. I want to be financially independent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use my photography or anything and everything to achieve that. So I would look at subway signs about freelancers insurance. And this is a company that provides medical insurance. And that's the biggest thing. If you
right.
want to be
yeah.
wealthy, you have to protect the money that you're making from catastrophic injury
right.
or
what
sickness.
What is the company, though, specifically?
It is a company that provides health insurance.
Right,
that's the
what are they called?
It's
freelancers insurance.
I've seen the ad.
Freelancers
oh,
insurance.
Oh, that's what they're called. Freelancers insurance.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you Google that, you
is
have
is that the
to,
same as Freelancers Union? Do you know?
Yeah.
I've seen
it's
something.
It's affiliated
yeah.
with that. Yeah, I think
okay.
it's a part
sure.
of that whole, you know,
okay.
you do have to pay a set fee to be a part
right.
of it. But because they use the strength in numbers and everyone's paying,
mm-hmm. right.
you
yeah.
know, you're covered.
So
right.
you have to apply, and then you can pay for medical insurance by their programs. 2 years ago, there's a 401k that they started to provide that I took advantage of, and now they have a medical facility where I can go there and not have to do a copay. I take Tai Chi classes, yoga classes. So what I'm trying to do is protect myself because my body is
right.
just as valuable a piece
right.
of equipment as my camera.
Right.
Absolutely.
It starts with the body,
right.
so,
mentally and physically healthy.
And I want to be financially independent. So I've been aggressively saving in my 401k. And that's I couldn't have done that without this company because, you know, you would stock up some maybe 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever you have the means to, but it wasn't a plan.
Right.
And now
right.
that there is that option available for me, I'm trying to save as much as possible because I'm 44 years old, so
right.
I'm not getting any younger, and I don't have Social Security. I don't have
right.
benefits.
Right.
So I have to protect myself so
that's
that
right.
if I get sick, the money that I've saved can be gone. If I stay in the hospital for 2 days,
yeah.
that's like 60
so,
grand. And
like
boom.
An ambulance
right.
ride is $700
yeah. I mean,
just right. to go to the other side of town.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking
yeah.
about that. You're absolutely right. Well, when I got mugged
mm-hmm.
and they knocked my two front teeth out, the police asked me if I wanted to go on a ambulance ride. And I was more scared of the ambulance ride than
the
attack because,
right.
you know, with the ambulance ride, what is that going to cost? Is that going to cost $10,000?
Yeah, that's the second assault of the night,
right.
basically.
Mm-hmm. Right,
basically.
Yeah, you, really. And
yeah,
and that
terrible.
Was part of really my idea behind getting the job.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, you're making the gobs of money, but the in-betweens, you need something.
Right.
You know, and we talked, you know, briefly about even when you were in your days and you were teaching for 10
right.
years, the job was necessary because I tried to think about a way, how can I make this work where it gives me the peace of mind and saying in between the checks, you know, I can go here, I can
right.
do this, and I know that the money's coming in. And then this way, I don't have to take jobs that I don't want to do. I don't have to go out at night and shoot for a promoter because I know that I'm
right.
set. So if you're going to decide to take a job, because a lot of us have real lives outside of that, and, you know, to expand on what Ray said, you know, the Social Security, the pension. When I'm done and I hang it up and I'm 65 and I got two kids, I've got my photography, but at the end of the day, I've got this other paycheck coming in.
Right.
And, you know, and it takes, photography has to be nurtured. It doesn't happen overnight.
No,
you can't
not at
make
all.
Money in 2 seconds. So I'm still very much in the early stages. So for
right.
me to take the job, I said I could do this. I could work overnight, 12 a.m. to 8 a.m. Everyone
right.
is sleeping.
Right.
I'm not missing anything. In the daytime, if I want to, you know, work in a studio and get commissioned to do shoots, some editorial,
right.
or if I'm getting paid to follow an artist, I can do that. You got money for equipment now because you
right.
got a steady paycheck. You got
right.
money for benefits if you get sick. You can pretty much fund anything. You got to hop on a flight to go to Chicago because
right.
there's an artist performing.
Right.
You know you got 2 days off from your other job, or you banked like 40 days of vacation. You can call in and say, hey, I need to take vacation.
Right, take that time
you
off.
You then
put
can
it
get on a flight to
super
Chicago.
Cool shoot. Right.
Go do what you need to do with the shoot. Not worry about food, not worry about hotel. And you got paid $3,000 to do it.
Right. I remember the first time I shot Fashion Week.
Sense.
By coincidence, Fashion Week came at the same time that we had the week off from teaching. This was in like 2000, and you know, you get that week off in February.
Right, the winter
Fashion
break.
Week fell then, and awesome. Before 9/11 in New York, you know, you could get around a lot easier. You didn't need ID and all of that.
Right.
So you could just, if you walked into Fashion Week like you belonged there, you could walk right in. Now you can't do it at all. It's totally different. But you just, and it was hard. You know, you had to mentally get that face on, and you could just walk in like you were supposed to be there.
Put on a bow tie and a little bit of lip gloss. And
there you go. Right. Try to look fashionable. Put something on that doesn't match in terms of color. And you walk right in, and I shot Fashion Week like every day of the week that I was off.
Right.
So sometimes it does work that way. But one of the other things when you talk about like later money later in life,
absolutely.
For me, one of the things I used to think about that would actually come in and keep giving me money was the stock that I was building in terms of photography that I was shooting. And I'd give these pictures at the time. My agency was Retina. And the rates were really good. I mean, Retina would never sell a photo for under like $150 to $200.
So and you
would
get about rates.
It's ridiculous. So, you know, I would get 50% of that. And if they sold like 10 shots, just 10 shots, you could get a grand a month just from your stock agency. And the way it worked, say in 2000, they weren't assigning me work at all. It was nothing like that. I would just shoot what I shoot and I would give them some shots and then they would sell it overseas and in the U.S. But today, I don't look at stock income, stock photography income as meaning anything because the rates are so low. Ray talked about it last week. Ray is like, I get statements with like a nickel payment from my stock agency. So I don't ever think now that the archive that I've built, you know, whether it's a photo of, you know, two chains from last week at BET or a Mace photo that I took in 2000 or whatever year that would be, I don't look at any of that as providing future income because the rates have dropped so low. It means nothing. So if I don't have some kind of 401k or something, then I don't expect to get any additional revenue from my photography, which I think is unfortunate because it was different 10 years ago.
I can't wait to expand on this. I'm so glad we opened up the dialogue. I don't want to incessantly ramble, but I'm really going to touch on a lot of topics that a lot of the young photographers have to face. Last week on the last episode, you guys talked about some of the percentages and the breakdowns of where you're getting 65, 35, and, you know. But if I walk in to one of the bigger agencies, whether it be a Getty or AP, whoever, they're now giving 70-30s. So that percentage has even gone down 5% from when you were taught. And then you get limited rights.
Yeah.
And then you lose all the rights after a certain amount of years.
Yeah, it's
so
crazy.
You no longer own the image at all.
Ray and I both came in at earlier times when the rates were better. They went
50-50.
Right. Yeah. And then they went to like 60-40 and now they're going to 70-30. It's unbelievable.
Because they realized they could just send anybody in there. You know, we could just push a button and, you know, we'll have this person do this. But go.
And that's clear. And let's be clear to the listeners. That's 60 or 70% to the agency, and the photographer gets the 30%.
Right. But does this not connect to what I was saying about that Neff ad, where in the eyes of Neff, they can start thinking, you know, it doesn't matter if we call Pete or Ray or John, we will essentially get the same photograph, which is why I say again, you got to get that personal work, the shots that only you can do, because it represents your world and your life. And again, we talk about this a few times on a podcast. Part of it is having an interesting life. If your life is just, I go home, I watch TV, I go to sleep, I wake up, you're not going to have anything to shoot in your life. But if you can set up a life where you're hanging out with cool people, you're hanging out with the guys that are coming up with the next form of skateboarding, and you're shooting your life and that's in your life, you can create some interesting work. So get out there and become an interesting person.
Absolutely.
Go take some classes, join some clubs, go travel, get an interesting life. Photograph your life as your personal work.
Right.
But continue on what you're saying about the stock agencies and the difficulties of that.
The stock agencies, I went to, and I really encourage anyone to do this. I don't know if they're going to do it this summer. It's something called Photoville. I don't know if you visited, John, when you went.
It was in Brooklyn, and
it was really hot.
I saw it. It was
summer,
interesting.
I went to one lecture where they had how you can do the music photography and make money from it. And there were a couple of well-known photographers there, and they were talking about the agencies and how the agencies, in a way, have cornered the market. A lot of people don't know Getty, and I'm gonna keep saying Getty because they're the biggest one.
Right, and they're huge.
They are
worth Wire Image
$4 billion. So if there wasn't money in intellectual property, there would be no Getty. So you, in a way, we have to take a value in what we do, but it's almost kind of become this pimp and loan shark situation because we're going there, and they're really nothing but just a big machine that just hosts your pictures and people click and they download.
Right.
So we'll use an example of one very popular photographer from Getty, and I really want to kind of focus on him and how he's done it because there's ways to make money in it. He's been around a long time, so don't even think you'll duplicate him if you're listening and you're brand new. Kevin Mazur, and we all know him.
Absolutely.
You know, we've spoken to him. I study all of you guys, by the way, online, and I just look at how you've done things in the business and your approach. If you look at what he's done, they used to put the rates online to download a picture. To get the smallest picture from a wire image, if even Johnny, he shot it, it's going to be $59 to put that up on your website or blog.
Okay.
As you go larger in the size and how long you want to keep it, it's $150 and $200.
Okay.
Kevin has carved out a niche where he gets his exclusive access that only he gets. And when you go to Getty, it goes exclusive assignment. His pictures start at like $300 and $400. Now, we would say, okay, he's probably got a 50-50. I'm willing to bet he's probably got better than a 50-50.
Yeah. He's got more.
Yeah,
he has better. He founded Wire Image, didn't he?
He did. He founded Wire Image. Right. So, you know, we're talking about competing against a guy who's already a millionaire and kind of got a shoe in. But the way that he maintains what he's doing is he gets that exclusive access. I'm watching the Grammys at home. I recorded it. And Beyonce hits the red carpet. And you could see him running behind her, snapping shots. Instantaneously, once they go on Getty, his downloads, when you talk about the outlets like the People magazines and everybody who's following Beyonce, and then everything leading up to this HBO thing, he probably made $100,000 in one night.
Yeah, it could be a lot.
You know, but I think there's a confusion and almost a disconnect that, you know, people think they can do that. And you really, really just not everybody can. You can kind of like steamroll and say, I got some headway here and I'm making some money. But the agencies, in a way, keep you under their thumb saying, you know, we give you the assignment. You know, this is the money you're going to make and this is the percentage we're giving you.
Right. And this is one of the really big changes, too, over the years is that, and the funny thing is it was a change that I predicted and I couldn't do anything to stop it.
Yeah.
But I used to talk to another photographer, Tony Cutajar, good friend of mine. We used to shoot a lot of similar stuff. And I used to say to him, hey, you know, some of the jobs that we get hired by the record labels is eventually going to go to like a Wire Image.
That's right.
And he would always say, no, it won't. And I used to give him one simple argument. I used to say, look, you know, Atlantic Records is a big company.
Absolutely.
And when they're going to hire an electrician, I don't think they just call like Fred's Electrical Company. They probably call some giant electrical company. And when they're getting packages messengered from one part of the city to the other, they are calling a giant messenger firm. They don't call Bob and say, hey, Bob, can you deliver a package for us? So when they're doing photography, why would a giant company call Tony or John or Ronnie or Ernie? Wouldn't they call a big company and standardize everything? I go, because you think about it, I'm giving them the pictures online and then you're giving it to them on a CD and then this one gives it to them on slide. Like, and he used to go, no, you know, they need us. It's about the individual. And I used to go, no, we're going to lose those jobs to the agencies when like Wire Image started first coming up. And sure enough, I ended up being correct. I couldn't think of any way to prevent it, though. But
it's almost like iTunes with the music industry. And I'm going to totally expand on this, too. Industry fought against MP3. It was first Napster and, oh, we don't want the electronic downloads. And then Apple comes with iTunes. Now the music industry has to embrace it. Because
you have no
in
choice.
The end, the manufacturing cost is lower. They don't have to manufacture CDs and artwork so much. Everything can be digitally done, and you have to go with the phone.
Which the comparison now for the photographers, what it means for a lot of photographers is that they don't necessarily have to go and look for work. And for a lot of photographers, that was never their strength anyway. They were good at shooting, but they sucked at finding jobs and marketing themselves. So here comes something like a Getty that just gives you assignments. They call you up on Monday. They go, hey, can you cover this event? It's $250. We're going to own it, but you're going to make some money today. And it's guaranteed money. And then a ton of photographers will go, okay, fine, boom. It's better than working 9 to 5 is what they're thinking. And they don't know how to get jobs on their own, so they do take those jobs. But you were going to talk about like maybe there's a little bit of an alternative to working for something like that.
What most of us are going to struggle with is not everybody can't walk into a Getty or anywhere else and just say, hey, you know, I'd like to work for you guys. And just to step back a little bit and just talk about what you're saying, I want to be clear with this. You can get that assignment and say, we're going to pay you $250, go shoot this event. And then Rihanna walks in. And God forbid this happens. She throws a bottle at someone and you take the picture. Getty owns the picture.
Right.
They're going to make $500,000 off of the $250 and they own the picture.
Right.
So you need to be very clear that if you're going to take that kind of buyout, your rights are completely gone.
Right.
So a little bit earlier, I talked about creating an establishment with an outlet. So you got a media outlet that doesn't necessarily want to pay these rates. And you don't. I'm not saying I'm in the arena to compete with like a Getty or something like that, but I'm going to say, you know what? Instead of you paying $200 for this one shot, I was at the event too. I can give you a 10 and right. one that looks exactly like that. And right. you can give me $700.
Right.
You know, we'll take that $700 because we know we can only download one picture
right.
and we can give everyone a gallery. Right.
So where would you post that in terms of just technically speaking, where would you post that image for someone to find it?
Oh, I would reach out to the outlet. Normally, when you go to okay. a lot of these events, there's writers here, there's people from all these places. So you pass out your cards, you make friends. So you get like an editor for something and they go, you know, we'd really love to have some of these images. And then you go, okay, well, what would you be willing to pay? Well, we do this, this, and this. And I say, okay, I go to the website and I see, okay, I see you guys got a lot of placements from Wire Image. I said, it must cost you a ton. And he's like, yeah, it costs like almost $1,000 to write this one article because we have to fill it with pictures.
Right.
And a lot of the kids, they get frustrated. Oh, I can't get my pictures anywhere. Guess what? On these websites, they need pictures because otherwise it's just text.
Right.
So as much as they want to not pay us and say, we'll give you $250, just go there. You need us because that generates traffic. People see the picture and
well,
go,
yeah,
I want to click
about,
on this
yeah.
article.
If I visit a blog.
Then you got 10,000 yeah. ads and so forth.
Right.
So now you make this establishment with this outlet and you sell them the pictures. But then you can't really protect yourself from another blog unless they watermark it with their logo from right-clicking and putting it on theirs.
Right.
How do you fix that? There's a system I found just by reading, and I encourage everyone to just do a lot more reading, going online. You'd be surprised at things you found out. It's something called PicScout. PicScout is an image tracker, which is going to help you license your images. And all it does is it puts a little fingerprint on your image. So if John works for Rolling Stone magazine and I meet him and he's an independent editor, he's like, you know, I do a lot of the web stuff and I noticed you did these pictures for Frank Ocean and I'd love to have them. You go, okay, well, how much are we talking here? Well, I could probably, you know, give you like $800, but I need a batch of pictures. So you say, okay. I'll give you a dozen of pictures for $800. Now, you know, because you're a smart photographer, you're not going to give him your best stuff, but you're going to give him stuff that's right. just good enough so that when he puts that article up, people will click on it and it'll right. generate that traffic so he makes the money. The $800 for a day is like, you know, you're making $800.
Right.
This is quick and easy. It didn't really cost you too much.
Right.
And you find a way to make the money. Now, they didn't watermark it. They didn't put a quote-unquote Rolling Stone logo on it. Now, you look on other blogs, just because you're doing your homework, you're noticing that a similar article by an independent writer and your
right.
image is
right,
there.
It got lifted from the first site.
So what do you do to combat that? Now, right. you use this PicScout system, which fingerprints it, and then you can go online and just type using the SEO, search engine optimization, because most of the websites do have it, the big ones, and if you put the proper caption on it, type in that caption that you put in on the picture,
you can
PicScout
find the photo.
Will pull it right up, and right. it'll literally snitch on the websites that have the picture up. And you can write them a nice letter and say, cease and desist and take the pictures down.
Right.
Or you can cut me a check for $800 because right. I didn't give you these pictures.
You don't have permission to be running my
right.
shot. Right.
Which is exactly what these agencies do. If you go ever take a picture from Getty and you didn't buy it and you right-click it and put it somewhere, they always know.
Right.
The outlets and, you know, not to continue the name dropping,
right.
but you look at a Global Grind, they've been in, everyone's been in these situations where they get approached and say, we didn't give you that picture.
Right.
You got to take it down or we'll sue you for $1 million.
Right. And fortunately, like you're saying, the technology, one of the good things about the technology dropping down to the everyman is
right.
the same kind of technology that a giant company like Getty has access to.
Right.
We can get access
you
to it ourselves through
way.
Like a PicScout.
Now.
And then we can do the same thing that Getty is doing. So that's one
exactly.
of the good things about that technological
Here's something
change.
That may make you chuckle a little bit. PicScout a year and a half ago was what?
What? Bought by Getty.
Bought by Getty. So does anyone see the design of what's going on here?
It's funny.
For me, and John, like he foreshadowed this entire thing with the Wire image.
Right.
I'm going to say this now. Maybe you might take this information and years later, but I'm telling you this is going to happen. Just like iStockPhoto, Getty is going to be the iTunes of photography, which in a way is a good and a bad, but it levels the playing field. Because now Ray can go out and say, you know, I made this connection with this artist or whoever. He may run into be standing next to Kim Kardashian in Starbucks, and he has his camera and say, hey, Kim, I have these really great shots of you. And we're going to talk about the personal touch in photographers that get the up and close,
right.
of course. And then she says, you know, I'd like to invite you up to my hotel room. The baby's up there. I'm going to do my makeup.
Right.
Right. Now, Ray gets a once-in-a-lifetime chance of going to shoot some candids and some really, really personal stuff for Kim Kardashian. And then Kanye walks in and goes, who's this guy? Oh, he's going to take some personal photos of us. Now, Ray's got this.
Ray.
No, he doesn't beat up Ray. He's nice about
He'll
it.
Beat up
He'll
beat me
up. He probably would. He probably would.
But Ray just got his blue belt, so right. He's got a shot.
So
he's
he
got
gets this opportunity, and then now what does Ray do with all this content? Now, he can go to People Magazine and approach them and say, hey, I've got these really intimate shots. And instead of gaffling and going straight to People Magazine and exploiting her, saying, hey, Kim, I made a connection over here. They want to run the pictures. They say they're going to do this, this, and this. Cut me 20%. If it's $1 million for the personal shots.
Yeah, but you know where I think it's going to go? You know where I think? Are you going to say something?
No. I mean, that could be a scenario, but these these artists are so savvy. That they're, I mean, the photographer is the last piece of the puzzle. Yeah. They'll cut that deal immediately. They'll cut that, like the Beyonce, Jay-Z, baby shot. They'll just do that deal for $3 million. And then they'll just hire any guy.
Well, that's what happens. They'll say, people will do this. Hold on, let's cut you off. And then Getty will say, okay, we're going to send this guy. Right. Then they send Kevin.
Right. There you go. But I'm going to tell you where I really think it's headed. This is really where it's headed. Yeah. You know, and, you know, we have the new Rolling Stone here, and you have Rihanna on the cover. Yeah. It's a Terry Richardson shot on the cover and some shots of his inside. And the funny thing is that, you know, whether you love Terry Richardson or you hate him, I'm personally glad whenever I see him getting work because he gets a ton of work. I mean, that sounded almost condescending, but I mean, what I like is that he created a style that's really simple, which I don't personally like the aesthetic. I'm not fond of that style. But he created a style that anyone could copy. However, people still hire him to do it, which I think is a beautiful thing because you're always afraid that if you come up with something like Gary Fong, he comes out with this little flash adapter. And then like every Chinese company on eBay rips it off and sells it for like $4.
Right.
So every time I see Gary Fong is still able to make money on it, I'm glad for him. So it's the same as Terry Richardson. But the interesting thing to me is if you look in the Rolling Stone issue, there are four pictures of Rihanna from her Instagram. Three of the four are like the best Rihanna pictures you've ever seen because she has the best access to Rihanna. No one on the planet has better access to Rihanna than Rihanna.
That's correct.
And all she needs is an iPhone. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to say F8 and be there. And what that meant was, look, just put your camera on F8 and be there, because be there was so important.
Yep.
Now, today, the iPhone replaces the F8. You don't even need to put on F8. You just need to turn on your iPhone. And then you just need to be there. And since Rihanna's always there, she takes the best pictures of Rihanna, which currently she gives away for free all over her Instagram.
That's correct.
However, what will happen in time, so Rolling Stone ran three pictures of Rihanna for that article from her Instagram, and they're really intimate. It's like her and Chris Brown. And actually, I think three of the four were her and Chris Brown. They're beautiful shots. And they're not paying Rihanna for those pictures.
Yeah.
And Rihanna doesn't care. Like, she's making millions of dollars. She's not going,
$60 million a year, guys.
Right. So she's not going, well, you know, your usage rate is 150 for quarter page, and, you know, that's 3 times 150, so I'm going to send you an invoice. She doesn't freaking care about that. However, there will be a time that the same way that they monetize the perfume and the clothing line, they will monetize their own Instagram feed. So that issue of Kim Kardashian.
I never thought about that. By the way, guys, because John hates the iPhone. Because he's saying this could be the death of the industry. And now I'm kind of seeing where he's going.
What's going to happen?
I mean, Kim already does that. I mean, she's monetized Twitter. She's monetized Instagram. She's monetized anything and everything. And more power to her, because that big ass is making money.
It's making money. But I'm just saying, it's like, what's going to happen is she'll have that through something like a Getty. And I believe, wasn't there a time that Jessica Simpson's father had some kind of deal with Wire Image where he would shoot his daughter and like he would get the pictures from her daughter? And again, this is why, and it's all coming back to the same point, because again, it's about the content. And if you are a photographer and your ability is, and the ability that you're putting out into the world is, if you give me Kim Kardashian and her giant ass, I can take a great photograph. If that is the skill you're bringing to the table, you're dead. Because anybody can take a good picture of Kim Kardashian.
Right.
Anybody can do it because the technology is so simple, to the degree that even Kim Kardashian can take a great picture of herself.
Right.
What you need to be saying is not, I can take a great picture if you give me Kim Kardashian. Or like I'm saying every day of the week, hey, create a television program and get some hosts and get some guests and I'm going to take good photos. No, you need to be saying, without anybody's help, I can get out there and independently take good photos. I can go find interesting people and interesting things in the world, and I can create my own content. Content is king. If you're a writer, again, it's like being in a band. You can't be in a band and go, give me some songs and we're going to play them and they're going to sound great. Yeah, dude, of course they will. The songs are already written. Anybody can make Could You Be Loved sound like a good song. Anybody who covers Could You Be Loved, it's going to sound great. You need to write your own songs. And as photographers, we need to be less dependent on these artists and waiting for them to give us access and begging them, can I please get photo pads and can I shoot the whole set? Anybody else is shooting two songs. Can I do the whole set? I'll give you some free pictures.
Oh, my God.
No, we need to be creating our own content that is so interesting that the artists come to us and they go, yo, I love what you shoot and I want you to shoot me. That's the key for 2013. That's the key.
You got to create the niche there. And,
that's the personal work.
Expand on the Terry thing. John knows my story. I had an opportunity just by doing what I do, and he often says, you know, the guerrilla style, you shouldn't have to always have to do it. But there was an opportunity I had to shoot Kanye, and it was because I was working on this personal project of being following Big Sean in detail in his career, which has gotten me so far in my photography career. But the opportunity presented itself to shoot Kanye and Sean, and I literally had 30 seconds to shoot up a shot, set up the shot. I was in studio. How do you do this? Well, I got this flash here. I'm going to steal a page out of Terry's book, and I'm going to have to shoot it Terry style.
Because just blast it.
He's not going to listen. I'm not going to say, hey, Kanye, can you do this? Can you do that?
Right.
I literally have 28 seconds. I remember walking to the wall as we're in the studio, shooting my hand, making sure that I had the exposure right before I even got there. And the minute we set it up, 45 seconds, I'm banging the shots. And I'm saying, if this gets published anywhere, Terry Richardson's going to call me the biggest hack ever. I was like, but this is the chance that I'm willing to take. And it's not to say that what he does isn't unique in a way, but he's coined it in such a way that you're nobody if he doesn't shoot you. If you look at his marketing, the two thumbs up and the plaid shirt, I walked past somewhere in the Meatpacking District, there was a spray-painted stencil with him.
I've seen that.
That's the importance of he knows how to market himself.
Well, he became a personality. He did like the Andy Warhol thing. He became a personality, right? So people want to be shot by him, even in a technical sense, in some ways anybody can do the shot because there's no mystery of the light. It's one hard on-camera flashlight.
That's it.
Sometimes it's off-camera, but it's still the same hard direct light. Mm-hmm. And you know, and don't worry about being looked at as a hack for ripping him off. I mean, every week you pick up certain magazines and every shot now is this. Rihanna's on the cover of another magazine this month with the same exact lighting thing, that super hard light with all the shadows on the wall and shadows on her own body from the hard light. Like, it's amazing. Everybody ripped off that style, which is why I say I think it's cool that he still gets to work because
well, small fine detail.
You know why you know I get to work?
Why?
Full frontal nudity. Full frontal nudity.
Yeah.
There you go.
You mean what, the book?
No, the him. He got no problem.
Right. Just
there with cock out, ready to go.
Yep.
He takes pictures.
He's willing to do things that people won't do.
Right. Well, he's a personality.
Yeah. You know, in his book, he's shooting like the porno shot of some girl giving him head.
Yeah. He's done some crazy stuff. But some of the stuff he shot, the only one I really liked just personally is that Glee thing he did was
Kate Upton stuff was really great.
But that's Kate Upton. I mean, is it possible to take a bad picture of her?
But it wasn't him on the hard light. He actually did the GQ shoot by the pool. And just by staring at it, I'm like, okay.
No, I think that still had the same thing. No, that was, I think that was still in the sun with a hard direct flash. It was still the same. It was just balanced, but it was the same thing.
If you look on, if you Google Pirelli calendar shoot, you'll see him in exotic locales on beaches.
Right.
And he has a... He has an assistant holding that flash, that Nikon 900 flash.
And that's the hard light.
And then that's it.
But the only one I personally like was
the... power to him.
Oh, no, it's amazing.
He's great.
It's amazing.
If he listens to this, that'd be nice.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
Anybody who can make it and survive, I'm really happy about. Anybody.
I mean, there's so many different things I could talk about. I mean, just from the shot, just to go back to that a little bit, the shot that I took of Kanye almost ended up, I had someone saying we could probably pitch this to Rolling Stone. Of course, I'm thinking at that point, look, you guys don't even know I've been in the game like professionally doing this hip hop thing for like a year and a half.
Right.
If I get a Rolling Stone cover, what?
Right.
That is
that'd be amazing. Yeah.
Completely unreal.
Right.
I was even honored to do it. I mean, of course, Kanye shot it down. And he said, no, we're not going to run the picture because at the time he wasn't doing any press. And he still isn't. And, you know, But it, again, being there and having the opportunity to shoot him, I stepped in and let him know, like, hey, you completely inspire me with what you do, not right. just for the music, but because you do it your way.
Right.
And last week when you talked about the jerk at the concert that holds his camera up in the air, I am completely guilty of that. But I will tell you, hold on, I'm one of those guys.
Recap it, because we can't assume that they heard last week's podcast. Hopefully they'll go back. But I was talking about how, you know, you never – how just when I'm shooting, say, a concert, I look at it like I'm supposed to be a fly on the wall. This is where I'm supposed to be a fly on the wall. Not everything I shoot – we talked about this on a previous podcast too. But at a concert, the concert is put on for the people who bought the tickets, and I genuinely feel bad to block them.
Yep.
Even if it's only two songs, I talk to them snugly, go, hey, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm only going to be here two songs. Don't mean to block you, whatever. And I feel like I'm supposed to do my job without interfering. And when I see these guys there and they're looking at their LCD screen rather than a viewfinder and holding the camera up above their head, they're blocking the audience from seeing the talent.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have no regard for anything. It's like they feel they're stuck. It's like you bought a camera and you think you're important. Like, really think about it. Like, that's all you did. You bought a camera. You didn't even necessarily go to school for photography. You haven't necessarily studied any books on photography. Haven't necessarily taken any good photos.
Yep.
All you did was buy a camera and somebody gave you a stupid little sticker on your shirt. And you think you're more important than anybody else in that room? It's disgusting.
Right.
And guys are holding up the camera. They're blocking. They don't care. They're ruining the shot for the other shooters, ruining the show for the audience.
Right.
It bothers me. And sometimes I've said to one or two, I'll go up and say something in a nice way.
Right.
But most of the time, I just sit and get annoyed. But talk about that. So you find yourself doing that sometimes.
I find myself doing that sometimes.
Why?
A lot of you don't know me. I'm going to listen to this. I'm 6'3". So with my height combined with my arm extending puts me at 8 feet.
Right.
8 feet tall if I extend my arm. Now, just like you said, you got to add the personal touch. If I'm at a concert and I know I'm in the front row, I'm in the pit,
right.
9 times out of 10, I'm going to turn around and look at the fan behind me because they paid and that they waited
right.
all their time. And I'm going to establish a connection with them and say, hey, I'm going to be shooting. I'm probably going to be shooting from this spot. And I always, here's my card, take my phone number.
Right.
I'll send you some shots.
That's
They're
good.
Not going to do
nice.
Anything. They're not going to sell it.
No, yeah, it doesn't
but
matter.
Again,
yeah.
I'm going to give them a few snapshots because it's their favorite artist and they stood here.
Right. Even
and
if
also,
you shoot them in that front row, they're happy.
Right.
Even
and
if
I
you
tell
give
them
the artist some
just
time.
Just give me a little, and if you just ask and get a little permission, that's
right.
fine. But I noticed the other photographers I can be a bit annoying to. Now, I'm taller
right.
than everyone. So we'll take this situation. I was in Philadelphia shooting the big festival at Jay-Z.
Yeah, Made in America.
Yeah, so I stood in the back row of the pit because I knew I'd be blocking somebody. And there was another guy, and they were screaming at him, put your arm down.
Right.
I'll stand behind everyone because I still have that advantage that I'm 8 feet.
Right.
But when you raise your arm up and you flip that LCD down,
mm-hmm.
not for nothing, the person that's on the stage, if you got a shooting at 100mm lens with a 2.8,
right.
you get that mic shot as if you were standing directly in their face.
Yeah, but I look at it, though, like it's just, it's a giant if, but it's just not.
It's almost
it's
always,
not,
though, John. For
no,
me, I know. I
No, but it's just not on the table. Like, it's like,
right.
it's just one of
right.
those, it's like going on a subway car and going, hey, if everybody gave me $1 right now, I'd have $700. Yeah, but it's just not on the table. It's not
right,
up in
right.
the realm of possibility. If you want that amazing shot, in my book, you got to get that artist to a studio. You have your own little world, your own location. You can shoot them however you want to shoot them, and then you can stand
like
wherever
said,
you want to stand.
Good luck trying to get them to do that.
Hey, it can be done. They're shooting in studios. No matter how big of an artist, the biggest artist in the world is who? What, Beyonce right now, Rihanna, both up there.
One.
They're doing studio shoots every week. It happens. You got to be that guy. It mm-hmm. happens.
Got to be Terry.
Yeah. Right.
No, or you can't be that person who shot Beyonce looking like a He-Man.
So he's not going to be the one, right?
He's not going to be the one.
Why don't we get Pete's take on this quick? Because
sure.
I don't know if you heard the discussion, but last week we talked about the, you know, there were pictures taken of Beyonce at the Super Bowl, and some of them her publicist felt were unflattering, and then the publicist asked those photos to be removed.
Mm.
So we spoke about it. I don't know if you want to hear our opinion, if you rather just go.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear this dialogue. Go, please.
But what do you raise? Should we have his opinion first or ours? What do you think?
I mean,
what's your opinion?
Okay, I'm going to give it a short version since we talked about this already. In my opinion, when you're shooting as an entertainment photographer, your job is to make them look good. You don't post stuff that makes them look bad. You just don't. You don't upload that to the agency, and you don't. You never even get the issue of the publicist contacting you saying, hey, can you remove it? Because it would never have been uploaded in the first place.
Correct.
Ray took a slightly different, different stance. Yeah, Ray's point was?
I want the celebrity to be as broke down and busted as possible, and that's the bottom line. Because it doesn't. I want Beyonce without makeup. I want Kate Upton. Like I sent up shots of Kate Upton with bruises on her inner leg, and they didn't put it up. And I was mad about that because there was another person who took the shot, and they mentioned the bruises on her leg. I mean that's important to me because she had bruises. Yeah, it's her fault. If Beyonce comes out and she doesn't wear America, that's her fault. If Anne Hathaway gets out of a car and she's commando and she don't wear underwear, that's her fault. I didn't dress her.
Right. Yeah, but there's a slight difference, though, of catching an awkward moment because the skill as a photographer, like I said, is to create that godlike image of the artist because it's unfair.
They got
to
come out and got it. They got to hold up the end of the bargain, though. Yeah, but
there's a difference between someone, like, not shaving their legs and looking bad versus, like, somebody's making an expression for that millisecond, for 1/250th
like Renee
second.
Zellweger. Our faces are incredible.
I'm not aware of those. But you know what I'm saying? It's not fair to take that moment where they looked awkward and post it. It's different if they have the bruises. Okay, whatever. That's fair game. They're wearing short sleeve shirts. She's got a big cut on her arm. Fine. Not taking that awkward moment. But how often do you encounter that with a publicist is saying, like, hey, we want approval or this is not flattering. Can you remove this?
You know, I don't really... That not that often because I'm mindful of, oh, they've got a double chin right here or, you know, the beads of sweat and just makeup running all over the place. I almost look to not do that because if I'm there and I'm shooting, 9 times out of 10, it's because I actually care about the artist.
This is what I'm saying, right? Like, I chose to shoot hip-hop. I started shooting hip-hop when I kind of fell out of love with rock music. It's because hip-hop, when I first started shooting hip-hop, which is around, like, 89, 90, 91, it was the best music on the planet to me, and that's what drew me to it. So, yeah, I automatically wanted to portray them in a good light because I loved the artists at that time. So we're going to close off, though, with mistakes if people want to talk about it. I'm going to talk about one mistake that I think I made in my career, and if anybody else wants to chime in, feel free. So I think one of the mistakes I made was following another photographer too closely. And what I mean is that when I was shooting years and years ago, there was a photographer that I was sort of in competition with, and he would always make more sales than I did.
Right.
So I would look at what he did from a technical standpoint of, like, how he was lighting what he shot. And I'd be like, well, I want my pictures to look like his so they'll sell as good as his did.
Right.
And I would do things like, for example, in reality, shooting with a softbox or shooting with an umbrella, it's exactly the same thing. I mean, it's just practically speaking, there's just no difference. So at this time, this is when I was, like, taking the bus to photo shoots. Like, I was teaching. I'd bring my gear to the school. I'd have all this gear with me, lights, and big cases of lights and all this stuff. Then I would teach, and at the end of the day, I'd go, you know, walk to the train station and then, you know, get off the subway, maybe take a bus with all of this gear. And I would carry softboxes because this photographer used softboxes and not umbrellas.
Right.
But softboxes cost me $250 each, $500 worth of softboxes, whereas two umbrellas total back then would have been like $50 or $60 for two umbrellas.
Right.
And carrying an umbrella is certainly way easier than carrying a softbox. Yeah, it's much smaller. You don't have to use a speed ring, whatever. But the reason I did it, so if you'd come up to me and said, why are you shooting with a softbox? If I gave you an honest answer, I would have said, well, because that other dude who makes all these sales uses softboxes, and I want my stuff to look like his so I can make the sales that he's making. The answer wouldn't have been, well, I like softboxes for ABCD.
Right.
It wasn't true to myself, and I think it was a huge mistake following someone like that. If I had been able to just kind of step back independently and say, how do I want to shoot this? Or how do my pictures look good? I would have realized that they look just fine with umbrellas. I would have saved myself $400-something in gear.
Right.
I would have had much less to carry, much quicker to set up. And, you know, if I had spent more time doing that in my early days, really just saying, what do I like? Which, again, plays into the personal work, not what does the market demand, not how would Terry Richardson take the picture, but just what do I like? What kind of lighting do I like?
You didn't really capture, like, your personal touch.
No, that took me a long time. Whereas, like, say now at BET, like, say if I'm shooting something, I mean, not just now, but for more than 10 years now, but if you look at what I shoot now, it's very much what I think it should be done. Like when I shoot BET, I shoot what I think is important on that set. I give BET what they want, but there's a ton of shots that I create that I know no one else would have gone on that set and created because they would not have thought these things were interesting or that that was the shot. But now I'm very much in tune with what am I trying to say, which again plays into like the Beyonce thing. When I'm shooting the Beyonce concert, there's something I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say she's beautiful, and I'm shooting it with that in mind. So it's not a matter of like, well, how would he shoot it?
Right.
I don't do that anymore. Yeah. Now I look at it, what's interesting about this to me?
I've never done that.
That's what I do. But yeah, I mean, you're lucky if you avoided that mistake. But when I shoot the subway, if you look at my street photography in the subway, I have couples being romantic in the subway. I've never seen anyone else shoot that.
Right.
That's what I thought was interesting about the subway, and that's what I shot. Someone else might shoot the rats in the subway. I don't know. So, you know, I found my own voice, but following another photographer was a huge mistake for me that messed up my photography for several years. It took me, you know, several years to break out of that.
I thought you were near perfect, dude. There's no way I would say you made any mistakes, honestly. I didn't think so.
No, that and buying the Minolta Maxim 7000i would be another mistake, okay? Yeah. Far from perfect, okay? The worst camera ever made. No, it was the 9XI, I'm sorry. Minolta Maxim 9XI was the worst camera anybody ever made, and it caused me to leave Minolta, and like 3 years later, they were dead. They were literally gone. They didn't exist.
And then they got bought by Sony.
Or somebody, did they?
Yeah.
Okay, they deserve to be gone. That 9XI was horrible. Great. Anything you want to talk about in terms of a mistake you made?
I mean, I guess for me, mistakes are just being paralyzed by fear. I can't think of anything that's occurrence, but just being paralyzed by fear or just making things too big in my head when they're not really that big in real life and getting over that. I don't even know how to get over it because that's not, I don't know the solution, but definitely don't be afraid or try not to let it or stop you from doing what you want to do.
Right. And what's interesting is because again, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you just got your blue belt. And I think one interesting thing about martial arts is one of the good things about the belt system, and there's a lot that I don't like about it, but one of the good things about it is that it does kind of force you to go to another level.
Right.
Because if you're in an independent job like this, if you're a photographer, and like you said, you have this fear, it's very easy for you to just live in that fear and not step out of it. But if you're like in martial arts and you are doing your classes and you have faith in your instructor and you really believe you're a white belt, and then that day comes and that teacher comes up to you and he just, you know, calls you up and he gives you that blue belt and he says, you are now a blue belt. You have no choice but to rise and become a blue belt. They force you to go to that level, right? Like, did you think you were a blue belt before he gave you that belt?
No, I wasn't expecting to get a promotion. I was just expecting to continue to be a white belt for years and years.
For years, right. But now that he has given you that blue belt, you don't have a choice. You are going, I can guarantee this, you're going to go into that academy, you're going to go back to Marcelo Garcia, and you will be a blue belt. You will rise to that level. You know what I'm saying? But we don't get that in photography. If we have that fear, we get to just stay in that bubble and go, I'm a white belt, I'm a white belt, I'm a white belt, and nobody pushes us out of it. And it's one nice thing with martial arts is you do get out of those bubbles. Someone forces you to do it to rise to that occasion.
I think my mistake, I know my mistake, was not reading.
Not reading, you said?
Yes, not reading and educating myself. And as a new photographer, you've really got to do some of the reading with what's out there. There's so many different outlets, and you know, there's just free information on how you can be better, and if you're having problems moving your content and how you could sell your pictures and position yourself, because you don't have the representation of a big agency, but there's still ways to make money if you're trying to make money. And even if it's not necessarily money you want to get access, you got to read and study. Again, I look at guys like John and Ray, and then I look at Terry Richardson, and I look at Jonathan Mannion, and I look at Dave. These are all guys that have different aesthetics, and they do different things. So in the beginning, I was reading the books on lighting and how to develop my technique, but I could know 100 things, and no one's ever seen it. So how did these guys market themselves and create their brand and create their own lane? So that was really, really important for me, from just like following and learning from other guys, standing there with you at BET, learning, you know, what you do and kind of peeking over at your camera and your equipment. And you would even ask me about my weird camera choice. I shoot with the Sony system, by the way.
Which is cool. They have some nice chips in those cameras.
Yeah, they do. Everyone shoots with a Sony, a lot of people don't realize, because the sensor is made by Sony. So you really have a Sony with Nikon and Canon buttons.
I've recommended those to a lot of people. These days, though, I actually recommend, if you're not doing like concerts or sports, if you're just doing portrait people, now I would just keep recommending the Fujis. I don't even recommend the Nikons anymore. Tell people go right to Fuji, get that X-Pro1 or the XE1.
Yeah.
I recommend those to people that aren't taking that route of the Getty event photographer on the red carpet and shooting these fast concerts. But the people just trying to work portraiture, go with the Fujis or the Sonys are really nice as well.
I love hip-hop so much, I don't necessarily know if I really want to be with an agency. I think if I get approached, I may take that route. But I'm not going to, like, squander my rights. I'm not going to take 30% from somebody because I care about this stuff too much. But you got to have the out-of-the-box approach with what you're doing. Right. And I didn't have that at first until I educated myself. Right. So you got to keep reading. A couple of outlets that I go to, one really important one is shakadoo.com.
And how do you spell that?
It's S-H-A-K-O-D-O.com. And all it is really just a forum site of very well-established photographers to amateurs that are sharing information. So you go there and you can type in the search, hey, I'm doing a photo assignment for Neff Headwear. How do I charge them? They haven't made it clear as if they're going to use the pictures for an ad or anything like that. How do I do licensing? A lot of us don't know licensing and how you're going to do it. And I didn't go to school for this. So there's so many resources. People use YouTube University to go and how to see a lighting situation.
Right.
You know, I may look at what John's doing, go through his Instagram, and then cheat off a little. You can pull your resources, but that one website gave me
I've never heard of that. But I know, I think John Harrington at one time was doing something similar to that. Right. I think he ended his, and that's interesting that they have that. I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, it's free. It's free. It's just a regular website, and people go in there and just post a question, and they'll just say, hey, I'm doing a wedding. And, you know, they said they have a budget. They don't really want high-end pictures. How much should I charge them? Okay, you're going to do the wedding or your engagement pictures. You're going to bill them for this many hours, and it gives you dollars amount. It'll say minimum, $500. Maximum, $1,000 if they're going to have you do printing, do this. And it all works better because if you got the new guy that's, again, not to knock them, that's giving away free pictures or being the $50 photographer.
Sometimes they don't know.
It hurts everyone.
The only
reason why is because they don't know.
Right.
They're just happy that their pictures are being selected by someone that they said that they like them.
Right.
And I was, in a sense, that guy in the beginning because I'm like, Global Grind's going to run my pictures. But I'm sure they saw. After a while, I'm like, I'm realizing you guys got a Pepsi ad on. You guys are making a lot more money.
Right. Well, I'm just getting exposure. Yeah,
right.
You're getting
a
check.
What I'm saying? And it's okay if you're going to do some stuff for some credit, because credit is important. So you could say, hey, I've been published
here.
But after you've got your mark and they're still saying, hey, can we get more pictures? You're going to have to start saying, hey, we're going to have to start doing some invoicing and some checks now.
Right.
Because last time I checked, Con Edison is not free. Neither is my cell phone bill and the rent.
And the rent.
So you really have to be smart and find ways There's another one called BlinkBid, and BlinkBid is really nothing but a program so much it allows you to put in the values of your time versus your equipment and everything else. And it's a BlinkBid software that they have that you can use, I believe, on a Mac and a PC, and it allows you just to punch in the numbers. It's going to take you 8 hours to do this shoot. You're going to have this much for a flight. You have this much for equipment, and it gives you the exact amount of what you should be invoicing. The software is like $199. You could probably do it all yourself, but when you talk about things like QuickBooks and stuff, and you just want to optimize your business.
But BlinkBid doesn't actually give you the amounts to put in.
No, you put in the amounts, but it does all
There's
the calculations for you.
There's one called Photo Quote that will help
you come up with rates.
I use BlinkBid as well. I use BlinkBid to prepare an estimate or a bid and invoices.
Correct.
And I actually don't use it for invoices anymore. I use it for bids and estimates.
But guys don't even know how to do that, John.
That's too bad. But the good thing about if you're using a program like that, like the top guys are probably using the same program.
Mm-hmm.
So when you turn in your estimate or your job description of what you want to do and what you want to bill, your paperwork looks just like that guy's paperwork.
Right.
And that's
huge. You can be the little guy.
Right. But your presentation can look the same.
Exactly.
So I use BlinkBid all the time for that type of thing. It's a good program. And Photo Quote is one that has prices in it, but I haven't used that in years. I still have it, but I just haven't had a need for it.
There's one more here. John's cheating off my pad here. It's a really useful app that I use, and it's for like when I'm peeking over at what John's doing. It's called Strobe Box. If you have an iPhone, do you have that app?
Yes, I have it. You know, the funny thing is, what Strobe Box does basically is it allows you to make lighting diagrams very easily. So you can, like, type in, well, I need a reflector, and I need an umbrella, and I need a beauty dish. And then you can kind of slide them around on the page, and then you can show people how you lit things if you want to show it, or if you want to make your own file. And on my phone, I'll show you when we finish this, I actually have a folder called Lighting Setups where I've got like 30 of those in there in case I get stuck. I can just look at the photograph and a lighting diagram that I did. But I used to put them on Twitter, and it was like nobody cared, so I stopped. I would put them on Twitter, and I thought guys were going to be like, oh, man, thanks for the lighting diagram, or like, well, why did you put the softbox here? And I would, you know, I'd sit for 5 minutes creating this thing in Strobe Box.
You're never really going to get the feedback that you want. And I understand, I'm not posting them. People are always looking, you know? John. I'm telling you, I've been in places and someone goes, hey, I know you. And I'm like, I've never seen you a day in my life.
Right.
But they've seen something on Twitter feed or somebody did like a repost.
Right.
And, you know, all these social media outlets, it's free stuff. And no one will ever say, hey, you know,
I saw this. Yeah, but then if that's the case, then I'd rather just do like everybody else and throw a picture of my daughter up and go, okay, here's my Twitter contribution for the day. Here's my daughter. Isn't she cute? And we're done. But I'm not going to spend 5 minutes. If I don't get the feedback, it takes the fun away from me to sit and do something like a lighting diagram. All right. But anyway, we're going to wrap there. So if you want to find me, Instagram is probably the better place. And it's just John Ricard, J-O-H-N-R-I-C-A-R-D. But the Twitter, which I don't use that often, and a lot of my Twitter is just my Instagram feed, is John Ricard NYC, as in New York City. So, Pete, where do we find you?
My website, for one, and that's flylifeimages.com, and that's fly, F-L-Y, life, L-I-F-E, and images spelled I-M-A-G-E-S.com. And you could also use flylifeimages as the hashtag for Twitter and as Instagram as well. I really like Instagram a lot more. I don't really tweet as much. And, you know, if the best place to find me is probably Instagram. You'll get some of my pictures, some of the things I've done, and you'll get a lot of the real me. So there really is no artificial there. You'll see that I'm a regular guy.
Yeah.
Yours
is good because yours occasional will be like, yeah, I got there, and they don't have my photo credential. It's entertaining, okay? And here's my favorite part of the podcast. Ray, where do we find you?
You're going to find me at Good Morning America because Robert Roberts is going to be back on GMA. And that's basically it. You're going to find me in the streets of New York working.
That's it. All right. Good. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.